Most people don't want to draw a lot of attention to their failures, but not everyone has filmmaker Terry Gilliam's sense of humor. The former Monty Python member is known for such fantastical films as Brazil and 12 Monkeys. He is now the willing subject of a documentary about his disastrous attempt to bring Don Quixote de la Mancha, the 1605 novel by Miguel de Cervantes, to the screen. NPR's Laura Seidel has the story.
At the heart of all of Terry Gilliam's movies, there is a dreamer. In his 1985 futuristic tale, Brazil, protagonist Sam Lowry has fantasies of true love. But his dreams are thwarted by the pettiness of daily life and the government's war against vague threats of terrorism.
Well, Miss Sam, won't you do something about these terrorists?
It's my lunch hour. Besides, it's not my department.
More than a decade ago, Gilliam says he realized that all of his dreamers drew something from Don Quixote. The Cervantes novel tells the story of an old man who reads tales of great knights and decides to become one.
And he sets out on these adventures, and he creates both chaos and magic around him as he marches and stumbles through the world. And that's, in a sense, what, you know, I suppose I've been doing in films, trying to say there's another reality out there. It's not just the one that you see on television, the ones the newspapers tell you. There's many other ways of looking at the world, and go and try to find them. So I thought it was about time to actually admit who my source material was.
Like Don Quixote, Gilliam has been accused more than a few times of stabbing at windmills. He has often run afoul of a Hollywood system not used to his unconventional style of filmmaking. So for his Don Quixote movie, the director decided to avoid Hollywood altogether. Gilliam set out to prove he could make his epic using only European financial backing. Over a decade, he raised $32.1 million, barely enough, if everything went right, to make the film he wanted to call Who Killed Don Quixote? Ever the dreamer, he decided to let documentarians Luis Pepe and Keith Fulton film him as he worked. Fulton says they wanted to show what it was really like to make a movie.
In general, people don't know much about filmmaking. I mean, what's known about is this kind of lights, camera, action, glamorous view, you know, slates clapping, actors talking about loving each other and every one. It's a very sort of superficial view that people get of filmmaking. And Lou and I, as filmmakers, have an interest in showing people, you know, the more warts and all mechanics of the process.
In Terry Gilliam's case, there were a lot of warts. Gilliam began assembling a crew in Spain 3 years ago. They built sets and made costumes. But because of prior commitments, their three stars, Jean Rochefort, Vanessa Paradis, and Johnny Depp, didn't show up until just days before shooting was to begin. Their first location was in an arid, rocky region about 4 hours north of Madrid. Gilliam knew there was a NATO bombing range nearby.
We were told they would only be there for 15 minutes each day. It didn't prove to be the case.
And action, John.
What's going on?
Gilliam felt he had to keep shooting.
We've now spent all this time, we got the fighters, but we'll do the scene anyway. I don't give a f- about sound. We'll use the close-up sound. We shoot through everything.
Gilliam says he couldn't stop because he couldn't afford to delay the schedule.
Once you've started on the film and you've got hundreds of people out there in Spain, everybody's working. You have to maintain the belief that it's going to get done. You've got to keep people believing.
That was a task that got progressively harder. Day two.
According to the duty of my profession, I have no choice but to take this man under my protection. Yield to heaven's command.
Ladies and gentlemen, just listen up for a second. I suspect there's a large bunch of lightning and a storm about to hit us.
It did. The crew barely got cameras and equipment covered when rain and hail poured down, turning the ground into a river. When the crew returned to shoot on day three, the color of the landscape had changed, meaning nothing would match earlier shots. As Gilliam's movie began to unravel, documentarian Luis Pepe says he and Keith Fulton weren't sure they should keep filming.
You don't think that a film of this size could in any way be brought to its knees. It was only when that idea started to creep into our minds a lot more that we felt that there was something you know, slightly exploitative about what we were doing.
But Terry Gilliam says he insisted they keep shooting.
If you're going to approach Quixote, you've got to understand the irony, the humor, the madness of the whole thing. And so when all of those things become reality, it's no good complaining. It's there. You chose that subject matter. Clearly, at a certain point, I knew the whole thing was cursed and that there was a God. That's what was interesting about it. It was an epiphany to realize there actually was a God and he hated me.
It was brave of Gilliam to let himself be filmed in the midst of failure, says New York Daily News critic Jack Matthews. Matthews wrote the book The Battle of Brazil about Gilliam's successful fight with Hollywood over creative control of the film Brazil. Matthews says Gilliam has a reputation for being brilliant, but overly ambitious and a tad unrealistic.
The people that worked with him would say we'd come on the set, he would have this idea, he would tell it to them in most graphic sense. And they would just sort of sit there with their jaws dropped, trying to imagine how they could possibly do that.
Matthews compares Gilliam to another idiosyncratic filmmaker who tried and failed to make a film of Don Quixote, Orson Welles. Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote was killed itself when its star, Jean Rochefort, was diagnosed with a double herniated disc in his back and could not ride a horse.
Be steady, Sancho. Trust me.
It may happen that before we pass 6 days together, I shall conquer a number of kingdoms.
You, we had a deal.
And your loyalty shall be rewarded.
Cut!
We're f***ed. Did you see
crazy.
Him sit? Did you see him sit on the horse?
Crazy.
The pain when he sat.
Yep. He can't do it. It's just.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna happen.
I was watching his face very carefully when he got on that horse, and it was just.
Right now, the script for Who Killed Don Quixote is owned by the German insurance company that held the policy on Gilliam's original project. The filmmaker is trying to raise the money to buy it back.
It's partly out of a sheer perverseness, because everybody says, oh, what a sad story, what a tragedy, so you'll be moving on. And I said, no, we're going to do this thing, because so many pragmatic, realistic, sensible people say, forget about it, get on with your life and your career. And I don't feel that's what one should be doing if you're going to have any respect for Quixote. You've got to do it.
But this time, Gilliam says he's gone to Hollywood for help.
I'm here in Hollywood right now with ready to sell my soul. It's there. It's got a price tag on it. It's available.
While Terry Gilliam remains lost in La Mancha, the documentary by that name opens tonight in New York and Los Angeles, and it will open gradually across the country next month. Laura Seidel, NPR News.